Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Pete, that's a lot of preparation.
No, I just jotted down a few notes. I'll tell you what hindered
that
me.
That is not a few notes.
In reviewing one, Michael S. Two, Roth's four, Beyond the University, Why Liberal Education Matters by Yale University Press.
Two full pages and then some notes from what appears to be hotel stationery?
No, it's the Sierra Club free stuff that they send you to put the guilt. Have you ever gotten those? You know, the return address labels from whatever?
We sent you this free gift, so we'd love for you to donate. I always think, what was the cost of the free gift?
I'm not doing it. I support the Sierra Club. I think I got it because I'm a member of the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. I'm a big fan of those guys. I wanted to take my son hiking on there. But my son, who's this big kid, he's like, no, I don't want to go. I mean, he's afraid of things. I don't know why.
I'm afraid of things.
I was going to take like a two-day hike, you know, 30 miles along this thing.
Fear is a very rational response to a lot of things.
Yeah, that's okay. I can live with fear.
The acknowledgments of this book, and I have read this book too. This is actually my copy, and I'll be glad to take it back from you.
And I will give it back to you.
In my first year as a college student, Michael S. Roth says, I often said I couldn't understand why somebody would study something just to teach it to somebody else. Pete, do you have anything to say about yourself and your
well,
failures?
Ironically, this summer or this weekend, I spent most of my weekend on Saturday and Sunday here on the Georgia Tech campus attending a conference, which was put together by Ashok Goel and Mark Rydell and a number of other bright people from Georgia Tech.
Those are all cognitive psych guys, aren't they?
Yeah, on advances in cognitive systems. And advances in cognitive systems are sort of the computer science engineering coming full circle of the liberal education. and it actually points out, and maybe we'll get to this in the next show.
You are burying the lead.
I am burying the lead. But I'm not a journalist, so I'm allowed to do that.
That's true.
teach something just to teach it to someone else. Yeah. Because ironically, many of the talks that people discussed pointed out that these guys, and these are guys that have been in cognitive sciences and artificial intelligence for decades, said the things that got them most excited about this field were not goodness of lecture. And let me tell you.
What does goodness of lecture mean?
Did you give a good lecture, an engaging lecture that traversed the appropriate material, but then summarized it well?
Like Richard Feynman and Michel Foucault, weren't they known for the lectures? Wasn't that the big high point? That was sort of the rock star.
Well, Feynman
quality
was known for these lectures that he taped, and the lectures weren't bad, but they weren't out. He wasn't the sage on the stage kind of person. He was the sage. The man knew more about physics than most people in the 20th century.
Can you think of a person, someone you know or someone famous, whose lectures in a course are riveting and are known to be?
Oh. I don't know.
Are you all right?
go watch TED Talks.
There isn't
TED Talks are exactly that. They are talks that are designed
Except
to do that.
Very those aren't lectures. Also, I noticed that there's no rappers from a gas station and there's no Chick-fil-A, so I don't know why you're still trying to cough up your lungs.
Well, one of my problems is that this is your book. Had this been my book, you would have been asked to turn to an alternative station. No, it might have had food on it. I don't think there's any food in there. There might be a slight pen marking where I was taking notes on your book on one of these things. I would have taken a highlighter and highlighted the crap out of this thing.
There
and
was
then
a time
put little sticky notes all over the place.
And you have put the sticky notes. Yeah. There was a time when I think I believe that the pristine nature of the book was important. And not the book like the capital B, but like whatever book you were reading.
Yeah, I don't care. My books have shit all
absolutely
over.
And I understand that. But like even paperbacks, trade paperbacks and mass markets, I would read them and I wouldn't crack the binding. And people would be like, how do you do that? You know, they used to. These days, I read so little, and I buy so few books that now it's like I choose to get the hardback from the library. But I used to think that the book should not be disrupted while you read it.
Sounds like a movie, Book Disrupted.
But then I just started to relax a little bit about that, and I started to feel less reverent. Ooh, flash forward to an eventual show. Less reverent of each individual book as an object.
But perhaps more reverent to the knowledge therein.
To the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the process of gathering that knowledge from the book.
Yeah. And so for a little while there, I tried to highlight and underline, and then it just turned into me, I was just underlining stuff. And so as an active reader, I take notes. That's my deal.
Oh, okay.
And I no longer mind if a book has a few cracks in it or you know, the dust jacket.
And if I own the book, I'll take the notes right in the book. I'll do it right in the margin, and I'll highlight the crap out of it.
I think I prefer to pull away from the book.
Yeah, that's okay. Everyone has their own.
Yeah. I've been looking for an app.
Ooh, that helps you organize notes from a book.
That would take notes, and by take notes, I mean would take my notes that I was giving it, but then also have a really streamlined citation search. So that if you were reading Beyond the University, say, and he says...
And maybe text quotes from the book that are related.
Well, yeah, but in particular, like he says that thing about Dewey. Dewey's a treatise on the return of philosophy or something. Do you remember that? He's talking about John Dewey.
I remember him talking about Dewey. I'm a big fan of Dewey and his view of what he calls liberal education.
Right. So reading that, he refers to it, but there's no full citation. But I would love to have a little app that if you put that in, Dewey, Return of Philosophy.
Oh, yeah. So he'll have notes.
It would create a citation and then
Dewey's
send it
Dewey's were in
something.
The 360s, as I recall. So there's a lot of notes in this book.
I hate flipping to the end.
Yeah, that's okay.
I like a footnote because I can drop down to the bottom of the
page
and come back up.
As opposed to an endnote.
I don't like an endnote.
Yeah, I write endnotes in a lot of my stuff, but I understand
why
you like a
footnote. Well, then you are the problem.
I tend to do endnotes for references, but footnotes for auxiliary information. All right, let's start right into this, mate, because you talk about burying the lead. You're just like, well, I like to read books.
I wanted to join in the fun, Pete.
You gave me this book, and let me tell you what I think of this book first.
Yeah, go for it. Actually, let's redo the full thing. So this is Michael S. Roth's Beyond the University, Why Liberal Education
Matters. But actually,
back
to your question, why would anyone learn something just to teach it to someone else? Yeah, I think that's silly, too.
Yale University Press, 2014. That's a full citation, Pete.
You should, even if you're going to be a teacher, you should learn things to get some passion about that, right? And that passion, even if you are an elementary school teacher, should come with you into the classroom.
Haven't we always said, also you and I and many other people, that teaching's not so much about transferring the information, but more, you know, engaging the mind and helping them, fostering their connection to the material itself.
So ironically, the cognitive science people agree with that. The cognitive science...
Why is that ironic?
Well, because, you know, you're talking like a philosopher, and these guys are a bunch of computer science majors.
Computer science is philosophy.
Actually, that's what they would say. Absolutely. It is. I mean, what they're trying to do is they're trying to invent computer systems that think like humans. And let me tell you, in the intervening decades since the 1980s when I was in graduate school, and I saw my colleagues at MIT attempting to write expert systems in chemical engineering using artificial intelligence, we have not made as much progress as I would have liked to have seen. But it's still a fascinating idea, and one of these days we'll talk about the role of humor and cognition and creativity, which is where I found two really good collaborators there. That should actually be a good thing. and maybe we'll talk about this later, but this whole idea of liberal education saying, and several times in the book, a lot of the particular characters that have argued, you know, vocational for more broad liberal education.
Characters. You mean real people that he refers to?
Yeah, real people.
This is not a novel.
They talk about the importance of the narrative.
Yeah.
Right. And so literature people are like, the narrative is very important. But computer science people point out that the narrative structurally, when I say structurally, I mean people writing down a bunch of computer code with a bunch of and or statements claim that the narrative is also important. In fact, Patrick Winston, who gave the invited lecture on Sunday morning from MIT, literally talked about the value of understanding how the narrative works.
And so what does that mean? What does that mean to you? And do you have any supporting evidence from them? What the narrative in code would be?
He has a system called Genesis, where he's attempting to take a few...
Is this a Star Trek movie?
No, it's not. I think that might have been a Star Trek movie. Number one, make it so. He's trying to rewrite Macbeth.
I can't let that go by, Pete.
Right.
Wrong set of Star Trek people.
Oh, did I? It's really... Number one, engage.
Not
Isn't
even that
Patrick Stewart?
Genesis, I believe, was the object, the bomb, a device in Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock. the Genesis device.
Damn your logic, Mr. Spock.
There you go.
Okay, I got the right one. Let loose the dogs of war. Good literature reference, actually.
Wrath of Khan is basically English 101.
Yeah.
Or English Lit 101.
Well, this is the point. So you're killing my conclusion here. My conclusion was that in the end, liberal education for the 21st century really should be mixed with something I want to call interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary education.
I think design principles are as much a part of liberal education as composition.
Yeah, but there is design of composition, and then there is design of an engineering artifact.
And
they have tremendous similarities.
We don't have to go back and like retrofit, engineering principles to literature, right? We don't have to say, here's design, and it fits composition also. But I think that composition, communication, and design, that even basic scientific method stuff, that's as important in terms of a liberal education.
Right.
Each of those are as important as each other, especially now. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to build a little microphone and speaker, with Arduinos or something, to set up in the minivan.
Arduinos, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah, to set up in the minivan, because I don't have very great hearing. I have a lot of tones that are missing. And when my
happens to guys as you get older.
Yeah, when my child's all the way in the back of the minivan, facing away from me, and we're going on the highway, and there's the whoosh on the sides, I can't hear what she's saying.
So you need your kid to be able to tap a little button and say, Lieutenant O'Hara, hailing frequency, please.
I need to be able to tap a button and get the background.
I can't even understand my 20-year-old daughter because I think she mumbles.
No.
Part of it is mumbling, and part of it is my hearing is bad. I think I'm gonna go 50-50.
Also, conceptually, you're not prepared for any of that.
No, I think I'm a hep cat. I think
I should be able to build that microphone. Microphone and speaker, just from my general education. Should have been high school. I'll go with college. That should be one of the things that.
Wow, that's a gutsy vocational statement.
I don't think so at all. I mean, liberal education, not as a collection of subjects, but as a point, right? Mm-hmm. As a mission,
right?
Should allow you to engage the world in which you live, mm-hmm. right? And both understand it and craft it to your own needs.
Right.
That's what it's for. A liberal education should stop you from saying, well, that's what they told me, so I think that's what's real. And also should make you be able to say, this situation needs to change. I need to fix it.
Right. So the importance of critical thinking is what you're
critical saying. Thinking and also critical, there's no real term for this, but critical engagement.
Well, so the value of action. Was also a point out here. You can't just sit around thinking about things like so many academics do.
You never told me what you thought of the book.
So why liberal education matters. He doesn't make that case really until the fourth section. And it is not. Do you know what it is? It's a history book.
Often,
and Michael Roth is
a history. The conclusions at the end of the book. That sometimes happens.
It is. But I was, as an engineer, I was looking more for a scaffolded.
What about as a human being?
Argument.
Pete? What about as a man?
As a history book, it's excellent. He informed me, as we often learn when we read history. Here's what we learn usually when I read history: is that
that's all been done.
It's all been done before, and we've been having the same argument for 200 years.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what this says. We've been arguing about this Jefferson.
I love the section with Jefferson. I've always enjoyed a UVA discussion of education, right? Because Jefferson's basic deal was, look, you need to be able to read a lot of books, you need to be able to talk to people who know a bit more than you, and you need to be able to play out in the
And
woods.
You mean book metaphorically now? Because back then it was a book. Now there are other media.
But Jefferson says
other modalities.
It now, yeah. And I believe I've referenced this in the past, but I now truly believe, and it took me a little while to get around to it, that the quote from Thomas Jefferson, "I would die without books," right? Mm-hmm. Can now, you can make an analogous argument, I would die without my iPhone.
Or access to information.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In the sense that you must have it, because a lot of people, and myself included, revere the physical object of the book.
Yeah.
And in fact, turn that into the thing, books are the best decoration, that sort of thing.
Well, now books are becoming more a work of art.
Certainly. If you're going to do a material book, you better do a material book.
Yeah.
Right. And there are certain things that are all about.
Is that like a material girl living in a material world?
Ooh,
But I will say this. It was a rich tapestry. It was a good history book.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed the history.
History of what?
The history of the argument of the balance in education. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
And also the purpose of education. And he starts right with Jefferson and backs it up with a lot of other people until he gets to Booker T. Washington, I think, where he advocates more vocational education.
And that's what I'm talking about when I say I should be able to build a very simple speaker microphone system.
Or at least find the information and put it together.
You know, I don't think so, actually. I think
you're being a little unrealistic.
No, I'm not being a little unrealistic. I took an electronics course in high school.
Okay.
I went to a magnet school for science and technology. So it had a little oomph. Right?
What school did you go to?
The Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology.
Oh, okay. How ironic. Jefferson.
It wasn't ironic. It was in Virginia. Everything's named Jefferson.
Oh, I didn't know you were from Virginia.
How long have we
just
known
like
each
everything
other?
Is it just everything is Franklin in Philadelphia.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
So there's Jefferson everywhere, and you know it's either named after Jefferson or he had sex with an ancestor.
I'm from Illinois. We got a lot of it's Lando Lincoln. You got a lot of Lincoln.
You are Lando Lincoln.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, where do we go from here, Pete?
But you do realize Jefferson's view of education.
I took an electronics class. Listen.
Okay.
I took an electronics class, right? And I have a general sense of I know what. Like, I understand that a microphone takes sound and turns it into electricity.
Okay.
And then that electricity will make a speaker cone vibrate. Right? And that's how you make sound again.
Alexander Graham Bell and Edison were the ones that first brought that to practice.
I believe there are some people who do not understand that.
Yes.
That's out there.
Yeah. I would agree. You had a good liberal education.
So I did pretty all right. But you know what I don't know? I don't know where to begin with a speaker and a microphone and making it work in the car and not killing anybody, i.e. not having a bare wire.
You know? Right.
So that's what I feel like. Just that addition to my high school education, I think would have been really useful and important.
Okay. But you're halfway there. That's pretty impressive. And it's impressive that you advocate that, because what I saw in the book was a little like the humanities people are getting short shrift and they have to argue to keep their stuff alive.
This is a little bit like Black History Month and Women's History Month, right?
Which are February and, wait, don't tell me, February and March respectively.
That's right.
As opposed to April, which is Dodge Truck Month.
Nice. I had no idea you were going to pull that one out.
That's right, baby.
When someone says Black History Month is February and someone else says...
Which is the shortest month. So
yeah, absolutely.
So African Americans are getting the shaft even in the month they choose.
You and I, two bald, middle-aged white guys...
When is that month?
We are not in a position to be all righteously indignant about how America has systematically institutionalized racism. Okay.
Okay, but we'll do it anyway.
Well, we can mention it, but let's not pretend that I can't believe it. Okay. Okay. So, what the hell was I saying, Pete? Why did you do that? I was going somewhere. Oh, right, the months, the history months.
What is Poughkeepsie, Alex?
So, when a dude from Texas, and I know this for a fact, this is a true thing. When a dude from Texas who's like 19, a sophomore, looks at me and says, "Celebration of Black History Month, huh?" Yeah. We're going to have a White History Month celebration. I refrain.
Because all the other months are White History Month.
Exactly. I refrain from saying, shut your fucking mouth, right?
But you want to. I've seen it in your eyes before.
I do want to because it seems like a very reasonable argument. When you have this one thing. Well, there should be a fairness. No, it's like the month is in response to the overwhelming majority and to the ideologically invisible prevalence.
But had he read Roth's book, Beyond the University, and learned about W.E.B., now you corrected my pronunciation, I just want to say Dubois, but you say it's Du Bois.
The French pronunciation would be Dubois.
Yeah, but he was born in Massachusetts.
But Du Bois himself said his name in that way.
Do you know he died in 1963 in Ghana? He was a Pan-African
Let me finish
person.
My thought. So fighting for liberal education and saying we've got to concentrate on this is much like one of those months. Right now, the prevalence is to say...
You are correct.
You know,
you are correct, sir.
This kind of liberal, hippy-dippy, fancy pants, intellectual luxury is no longer useful. We can't afford it. Wisconsin, what did Wisconsin just do?
Uh-oh. What did they do?
Oh, did you know? Oh, let me get...
Well, they have a governor who is a tool. I'm going to say that. He's a, just a tool,
oh,
Scott Walker.
Oh, Pete, you're out on a limb. I can't believe it.
But you're actually jumping into section three where we talked about the tradition of the German research university.
Let me finish.
That's when we started sticking it to the humanities.
Let me finish this thought with this cut, and then I'll move on.
Okay.
Wisconsin cuts public school budget. Governor Walker's approved Wisconsin state budget includes deep spending cuts in public education, expansion of the voucher school. Milwaukee public schools are set to lose up to $71 million in funding, $800 million total state funding to public schools. And there was a thing about how perhaps tenure should be, I don't know if you would outlaw tenure, but removed from the university system through state law.
Okay.
So how about that?
For
an attack on liberal education.
But that's attack on education in general, not necessarily liberal. And actually, protecting critical thinking, even if it's not popular, is one of the roles of liberal education, as pointed out in his book. The point I will say is I was not aware of W.E.B. Du Bois until I read this book. Fascinating.
You were not aware of the personage himself?
I was not aware of him.
Really? How'd you get through... This is a real question. How do you think you got through high school history without having Du Bois? I mean, you knew who Booker T. Washington was, right?
I did know who Booker T. Washington is, yeah. And George Washington Carver. And
I mean,
maybe I studied him.
Certainly, those
him.
Are black luminaries. But I mean, very distinctly, Booker T. Washington as an advocate, W.E.B. Du Bois as an advocate. In
maybe I did, but
time.
I forgot.
Now that I believe, because there's plenty of stuff that I read about, and I think, do I know this? I do. Mm. I do. When did I?
Oh, yeah. And you're right. I mean, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but he talks about Bloom, I think, in the third or...
Did you say Bloom?
Bloom.
Bloom.
Not Bloom's taxonomy, but Bloom, the closing of the American mind.
Yes.
Which I read two-thirds of that book and then stopped reading it because Bloom was guilty of the blindness. Was the blindness that he introduced, but it was William James, I think?
Bloom's a little bit reactionary.
No, that's okay. He's right. He's right that... Basically, what I remember from that book is he said, you know, there was a day where college professors were these Renaissance people that you could talk to about all different topics, and they were broadly educated, and they could discuss broad things with you. Now we have become so focused on our particular research area that we don't know anything else about anything else other than that. But I did stop reading the book because he had the blindness to see that we base everything on Western philosophy. He left most of Eastern philosophy out. And ironically, this weekend, we were talking about Eastern culture in that someone was talking about natural language processing, right, which is one part of artificial intelligence. You need to be able to take words and parse them.
Computer, I'm out of milk.
All right, and we can parse a lot of that stuff pretty darn well. I mean, there's this Amazon device that it's just a speaker that sits across the room and it can sense if you're close or far. And you could say things like, you know, I forget what the device is called. You know, I've fallen, I can't get up, call an ambulance, and it will do it. Or if you say, play rock and roll music, it will do it. And it will do it based on previous patterns.
I'd be very
and
interested
knows
to hear
you.
What a computer thinks is rock and roll music.
But the point is, someone said we cannot parse David Copperfield because the sentences are too long.
Right. And you're supposed to toss in there against me, like, well, it's what you think is rock and roll music, right? The artificial intelligence only knows what you put into it.
And that's basically where we are.
Until it doesn't.
Yeah, and then
until it knows more.
Then Skynet goes active, and
Skynet,
we're all
that's
in trouble.
What I was going to say, and then Skynet. Did you see Google has a cheetah robot that can jump over hurdles?
No.
Yeah. It's a four-legged robot. Mm-hmm. It can jump over hurdles and run at you at like 60 miles an hour or whatever it is. You know, if you give that thing teeth, we're done. I have been afraid of the cephalopod revolution, that the octopi would figure out how to, you know, put on like breathing apparatuses and come up and take us down. And yeah, I know that I did apparatuses and octopi. I know what I'm doing.
Didn't you tell me you can say octopuses?
Absolutely. Octopi sounds creepier.
And that's why you choose to use it.
Bingo. I've been afraid of the octopus. And it turns out I need to be afraid of the robot.
But actually, the ethics and morality of what they're doing figures prominently in, I'm not even going to say artificial intelligence, based on the National Science Foundation funding patterns I learned, they like to call it robust intelligence, because our artificial intelligence now is not very robust. it's pretty stupid.
It's kind of childish.
Yeah, it can't quite react to things.
So. Well, that's not childish at all, because I have discovered that what a child can do is react to anything.
Perhaps in an inappropriate and very bizarre way, but they can't react to everything. But one other point I think that...
Stop using words that start with P.
Roth
I'm
makes
begging you.
Is... Now I can't remember because you're getting me off my game. It was... But let's be honest. Much of the book is about the balance between practical vocational training.
It's a history of
and
the
broader
American education debate.
Liberal.
Right.
But I guess what we forget, though, is what do conservatives think of this book? Because when you start with Jefferson, Jefferson and subsequent luminaries point out that the purpose of education is to create a more egalitarian society.
Well,
commie pinkos.
I think you have a classic... you have a classic. I don't even know where I'm going with that.
He talked about, what did he call it, raking through the refuse. Okay, it was not a politically correct statement. To say, you know, you have a lot of poor people who are really smart who should get an education and contribute to society.
If you
educating poor people, dangerous.
If you used conservative the way that I think it rings these days, which Republican Party conservatism,
which
or
is
even
just,
Tea Party conservatism.
I'm going to go with dumbassery for 400, Alex.
Sure. Okay, whatever. You know, look, I have gotten to the point now, sidebar.
Okay.
I'm reading China Meville's, and I think that's how you say it, China Meville's book, Kraken. And
I just like anything with Kraken.
It's awesome.
Because at any point do they say, release the Kraken?
I think it's coming.
Okay.
It's reminded me that for a ridiculous urban magical story, right, it's Pulp Fiction, it has reminded me that the positions of all the people, right, are usually understandable. They are rational positions, mm-hmm. right? Perhaps some of the faith that is involved in understanding what, you know, the answer to your question is, like, what are we going to do about this, like, might change, but... It's not that the people are stupid or the positions are stupid, right? We just disagree violently with them. So, yeah, you can say the Republicans are stupid. You can say the Democrats are stupid.
I know a lot of smart Republicans, actually.
You can say that, Democratic principles have destroyed American cities. You can do all that stuff. It's just not going to help us. It's not going to help us. So what are the conservatives going to think of this? What are people who think that liberal education is pointless? Or what are people who are...
Oh.
What are people who have conflated liberalism, the left, the Democratic Party...
Right. And liberal education.
And progressive ideals.
Yeah. I always call Dewey a progressive educator, as did George Carlin, by the way.
You know, I was watching some George Carlin last week.
He talked about Dewey.
He was an angry, angry dude near the end there.
Oh, he was very angry near the end.
I don't remember him being that. When I was younger, it was easier to take when he'd say, here's a list of people who should be killed.
But he had some insight into society and how we should change it. Toward the end, he agreed on a talk show that he goes, I'm just standing back and watching the whole thing implode.
Yeah.
He actually said that.
He had a certain sense of, look, it's all on fire.
I'm not quite
there
yet, but I understand why he believes that, because people do some really stupid things.
Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio, and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch at Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.